Hey, there we are. We are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff podcast. Today, we've got a round table talking about a comic subject, sort of like we used to do in the old days. And today, we are talking about super teams, best, worst, and strangest. And we've got the usual panel, although it's been maybe a year since we've had everybody on at once, I think, or maybe 6 months. We've got Aid Smith, Jacob, Chris, and Walt. How you guys doing?
Oh, great. How are you?
All good.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
Wow.
All right. The subject is best, worst.
Perhaps the moderator should pick someone.
There you go.
All right. So just to set it up for listeners, best, worst, and strangest super teams. And Chris, you go.
Oh, well, good. I can start and end this conversation all at once. Justice Society of America. The beginning, everything else is just commentary. You know, I kid, I exaggerate because I want to get listeners riled up. But no, seriously, I mean it's the thing that proved that a superhero team could work. And it embodies everything that's great about the Golden Age. It's so primal and so pure and so perfect in its way, and it's got every element, it's got most every element you're going to see in super teams from there on out. And just as individual characters, I mean, these concepts are so resonant. And I would say that even if you don't include Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman in that group, it's an entertaining team, an interesting team, a fascinating team, and a perfect team, even if you take the three best known members out of it. How many other super teams can claim that? You know, and there's just, and the way that other writers have taken and put in layers on that, and this is where I have to represent for my friend Roy Thomas, and a friend, we sort of worked on a book together, and he sent me a free copy, and he seems to know who I am on email. I'm counting that as a friend, darn it. But anyway, yes. So,
are you and Roy still talking regularly?
Every now and again, he is more frustrated with the online world than I am, which I think befits a man of his accomplishments and interests. But we do swap emails every now and again.
You ask him for that $7 he owes me?
He owes you $7?
Yeah, we were at a hot dog stand at WizardCon about 20 years ago, and he was like, man, I'm a little short. Can you help me out? And I was like, only because you're Roy Thomas. So that's, I just made all that up, Chris. That never happens.
Well, you know, we've had weirder celebrity encounters between the times we've been doing cons, between the lot of us. So, I mean, I'm totally plausible story for me.
You know, I was one of the last waiters to ever serve Orville Redenbacher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like wow. 2 days after I served him chicken Kiev at a family wedding, he was dead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I can never tell when you're actually telling the truth or not.
That one's actually true. I was working my way waiting tables through college in Indiana, and Orville Redenbacher, as you might know, is the popcorn king of Indiana. And he was there with his female paramour, who was about half his age. So she was six. She was like 60. And the dude didn't actually talk to people. He was kind of like this scared little crab man. He would, if he saw you coming as with a look on your face, like you might engage them, he had a stack of stickers. He would just jam one your way and then scuttle away. And the sticker just said, I'm at the Popcorn King. And, it was all right. Anyway, Chris, JSA is your best. Who's your worst?
Well, okay, this is why I had to say something nice about Roy Thomas, because unfortunately, and I hate to do this because I love the man, I respect him, he was helpful to me in writing a couple of my books, but when I got stuck having to stat them up for the Green Ronin DC game, I realized how really, really, really much I really, 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 really hate the Young All-Stars.
Really? Okay. Well,
yeah. Now, if I had done more, like if I had stayed through comics longer, I'm sure that there would probably be some like Rob Liefeld, you know, X team, X this, excrement, or whatever it is, you know, with a guy with two big guns, two big thighs, that I would probably despise way more than that. But basically, what happened was, you know, they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths. They told Roy Thomas that he couldn't write the Justice Society on Earth 2 the way it was intended to be. Everything got merged into one Earth, and that if he was going to continue doing the splendiferous All-Star Squadron, where he had like the entire Golden Age DC universe to play with, he would have to focus on a brand new team of teen heroes. Now, this is weird for a guy that just technically contributed to the Hero High source book to admit, but teen heroes always leave me cold. I guess in the same way that, you know, if I worked at a bank, there would be a limited how much I would get out of a reality show set in the bank. You know, it would just feel like I would go home, go to work, come home, and then go to work again. But, you know, just I have a very limited interest in teen heroes. But, you know, you throw in the fact that, like, the golden age characters that Droy Thomas had made us care about are just hovering around in the background. And I read the entire run of Young All-Stars, and it's all about, you know, 22 pages of these teen boring, bland teen heroes, and you might get one page of a character you really care about, like, wow, how's our man doing on his drug addiction? How's the Jesse Quick Johnny Quick and Liberty Bell romance going? You know, is Hawkman going to put the Justice Society back together after they get to the army? It's like, you know, everything about that book was a good read except for the main characters, their stories, their powers, and it's just a disaster for a Golden Age fan. And even worse was, you know, Roy's written a lot of stories. Any writer with a track record, you've got your wins and your losses. You know, I will go to my grave being proud of Golden Age and Time of Vengeance, but bring up Dead Presidents and you'll make me cry. You know, that's one I really, really wish people would forget that I wrote or had anything to do with. You know, so yeah.
What's Dead Presidents?
It was an adventure for Deadlands, and it got caught up in the whole Cyber Games buyout of Pinnacle. Mm-hmm. So it was a 4-chapter book, and 2 of the chapters were rewritten with no input from me, and it was the first and the last chapters. And in those 2 chapters, the guy who rewrote it changed the name of my villain. So the name of the villain changes from chapter to chapter, and it's got my name right on the cover.
Well, that's some Augustine Burroughs sort of deconstruction going on there, huh?
It's the book that makes me wince the most whenever people bring it up, because it's at best half of what I wrote, and it just really shows that it's 2 different authors, and yeah, it could have used another editing pass, quite frankly.
So where can I get a copy?
What, look at the garbage dump near you.
I'm not allowed to go back there anymore. There was an incident. But just
to finish my point, that I raised here with bad stories. It ran for 30 issues, and a good 22 of them are, you know, that Poe story that only Roy Thomas has read, it actually happened. And here's a 6-story arc about how this story happened. And now we're going to reenact it only with these superheroes you don't care about. Followed up with, hey, here's an obscure 1930s novel that only Roy Thomas has read. Guess what? It really happened. And we're going to go reenact that with these characters you don't care about. So, yeah, it's just, maybe it's just it's placement, you know. It's like, you know, you always feel sorry for the presidents that came before and after Lincoln, you know. But just following up All-Star Squadron, which is still one of my favorite comics to go back and reread with Young All-Stars, wow, it's like going from Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band to Lou Reed's Metal Machine Music. It's just like, what the hell? What the hell, man? Really, seriously, you can't do this. So, yes. All right. Well, okay. I think I've offended an ex-employer, Lou Reed, and Roy Thomas. So, yes. So now I have no friends, and I will happily shut up.
It's cool. I have under authority. Lou Reed is not listening. So, you're all right.
Okay. Good.
Walt, what you got? Walt, are you there?
Yes. Mute button was being touchy. By the way, I found that someone who's got a copy of that. So, I posted it in the chat.
God.
Yeah, you're welcome. I grew up in the 70s and early 80s, and of course during that time we had some wonderful Hanna-Barbera stuff, and I think that my favorite of all time has to be the Super Friends. And there's my music.
Sorry, I'm going mute.
So that's not the tone we were talking about before we went live, but I'll take it. I loved the Super Friends. It was one of my first introduction to superheroes, and I loved the fact that the cast was so broad. I mean, you had the, you know, you had the basics, you had Wonder Woman and Batman and Aquaman, Superman, but then you had these other cool characters that just, as a kid, I was just like, I wanted to know more, like Black Vulcan, you know, because Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, you know, as a kid who was learning English, I understood these terms because it was those were words I could easily ask my teachers or whatever. But Black Vulcan, you know, here's this word in another language, and I was like, what is this? This is cool. Or yes, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, I want that.
So there was Apache Chief and Samurai, and I was just like, what are all these things? Because I mean, my family my mom's side of the family is from Italy, and is. I think from now on, Italian Parliament should use that when they come to session. But I mean, it was one of those things where I could understand all of the characters that were like the main line, but these side characters opened up an entire world where, you know, a young kid was then introduced to the library where I could learn all about this stuff and learn about the Apache, the real Apache, learn about what the samurai actually were, learn what Vulcan was. And even though you're talking about a Latin, you know, a Roman god, I mean, the concept of looking into an African-American version of this led me to mind-blowing subjects all over the place. So, I mean, even though I 30, 40 years later, everybody's just like, oh, you know, it was so horribly done. You know, this is whitewashing. And it's like, shut the fuck up. Somebody tried. And in the beginning, that was probably the extent of what they had to work with and what the networks would allow them to work with. But it showed that a willingness to say, we have more than us in our society than just this. There's this whole breadth because America is just a big hodgepodge of everybody. And I thought that was cool. And it might not have come across the way it should have been, but to me, it came across as wonderful because it exposed me to all this other stuff. So I appreciate it.
No, I'm kind of there with you because that was my first exposure to superheroes. When I got to comic books later, I was kind of disappointed to find out there was no Apache Chief character, and there was no Samurai character, and there was no Black Vulcan character. There was no El Dorado.
Right.
That was kind of a bummer.
You know, and why can't we have those, you know, and a version that not only makes sense, but also does characters like that justice.
Yeah, did Black Lightning start on the Super Friends, or am I imagining things?
Black Lightning was already established, but the story goes, and that they made him Black Vulcan so they wouldn't have to ever pay Tony Isabella.
Who's Tony Isabella?
The guy who created Black Lightning.
Yeah.
Oh, and he owned a piece of that then, right?
Possibly, maybe, sorta, but the mm-hmm. but the that is the official internet story. But you know, I mean, it's the internet. I don't know how credible it is, but I'm hard pressed to come up with an explanation why they wouldn't just use Black Lightning, because it's essentially the same character.
Yeah, fair enough.
And didn't Apache Chief show up in 52 in Countdown?
That was Super Chief.
Oh, yes, Super Chief. It goes back to the '50s, actually.
Ah, there
yeah,
you go.
See? Yeah, he was. He showed up, was kind of a jerk for three or four issues, and disappeared into a vortex, and hasn't been seen since.
Exactly, so, yeah.
Should anybody bring up the god awful official entry of Wendy Marvin Wonder Dog and Zan and Jaina into the DC universe?
Please no. That was terrible.
Yes. Wonder Dog was a DJ at a party at the Fortress of Solitude in Lego Batman, and that was fun.
There you go. That's how you use that character.
Yeah. Oh no. I mean, my kid. I've seen that movie. Let's just say 1,000 times since it's come out on streaming. And my kid always lights up when it gets to that scene. So.
My friends who are parents are subjected to far worse fare than that on a regular basis. So yeah, if I were a parent, I would count my blessings. I'll get for repeated viewings for that.
Yeah, well, I get it from both sides. I got to watch that with my kid. Then it's my wife's turn to pick movie night. I don't know if she does it to punish me, guys, or if it's just what she likes. But I've seen all Michael Bay movies from the last 10 years. And this last weekend, I got to see Pitch Perfect 3. So if you guys will talk about that and, you know, deconstruct some of the genre assumptions, really dig deep into what it's all about, I'm up for that podcast. So let me know.
That's I think there's a podcast you should listen to called This Is Why Daddy Drinks. I think that's a
yeah, fair enough. All right, so that was your best team. Do you have a worst team and a strangest team?
Strangest team, the cast of the original Star Wars. Yeah, that probably be because and not the movie, the comics. Because Zach's on the rabbit, right on. And then what do you call it? Worst team? I really can't think of one because, I mean, it's all going to depend on the writer and the editor at the time. Because, I mean, at times the Avengers have sucked so bad that it's just like I can't deal. But, I mean, really it depends on the writer.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I remember I was reading I think it was the Giffen to Midas run on JLA, which I thought was, you know, funny and sad and incredible. And then I forget who followed it up, but it was the Justice League was like Superman, Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Fire and Ice, and Bloodwind. Remember Bloodwind?
Oh, wow. God, yes.
Which is Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, it was Martian Manhunter. After like 6 months, he was like, oh, I'm John Jones. I've just been messing with y'all for no real good reason. So, hey, how's it going?
Bloodwind, proof we're stealing stuff out of Rob Liefeld's dumpster.
It was the 90s, so.
Positively.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Since I mentioned Batman Lego, I was just looking at the party scene for that, and I'm pretty sure they had a lot of Super Friend nods in there. Cause looking at a still, I see Samurai in the background. I see the Wonder Twins. And I think I see Black Vulcan. So another point for Lego Batman, which is the bane of my existence. And also it's the bane of Lego's existence.
Apache Chief is the subject of one of my favorite Harvey Birdman attorney at law episodes. So you got to give him that too.
Really?
Yes.
That was a great show.
Yes.
Terrible Xbox game, but it was a great show.
Well,
all right, hey, enough sidebars. Walt, spotlight's still on you. What's your worst team? You said your worst team. Do you have a weirdest team?
Weirdest team? Originally, this was going to be my best team, but then I decided that the amount of bad has outweighed the amount of good. In the beginning, I loved Wildcats from Image. I thought the story was fun. I thought the characters were fun. And then the Ladytron era took over and it was just like, ever since then, it's just been this weird roller coaster ride of psychotropic drugs and beating your kids. And I'm just, it just doesn't do it for me. I mean, the original where, you know, the leaders of the team were all, you know, these expatriated, military leaders from another world and they had to assemble, you know, these like descendants that had been passed down from thousands of years that worked for me. The whole Spartan was an android worked for me. I mean, it was a fun team. And then, a couple of years went by, Jim Lee left the book and it exploded. I couldn't deal anymore. Even when they tried to reboot it several times during the Image apocalypse of Wildstorm, it was just like, I can't do this. So yeah, that's going to be my weirdest.
You know, Warren Ellis has been rebooting that the last year.
Yeah. I've read a couple of issues and I don't know. I can't get into it. It just doesn't have that same, and it's not like I was a kid during the 90s when Image started coming out. I was in my 20s and it was amazing, you know, especially when you were just like, there is such garbage coming out of Marvel right now, like freaking Cap Wolf and all this other junk. And I'm like, this is retarded. I need something else to read. And, you know, things like The Darkness, Witchblade. In the beginning, these were fun concepts that really ignited an imagination. And when they had now their own versions of super teams, you know, not the Liefeld stuff because that was whatever. You know, pockets and small feet. But I mean, it was the Image line of like really cool superhero stuff was taking stuff in directions that really hadn't been explored very well by companies like Marvel and DC. You know, even stuff like Wet Work. I think that's what it was called. All the Guys in Gold.
Yes, Silver Book. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just a fun concept, you know, a really, really fun concept. And it was, and it just seemed like when all that money started streaming in, all these other guys decided to take all these side gigs and bring in like the JV teams to start writing the books. And it just, all those titles just exploded. But I'm happy Image has bounced back because they're doing some amazing work right now. And if you're not collecting some of their titles, you really are doing yourself a disservice as a comic fan because they're doing epic storytelling in graphic form, and it's really, really a positive vibe in the series. I mean, in the industry.
Cool. Abe, you're next. What you got?
Okay, so I have kind of like three teams I'm really fond of. The first would have to be the Claremont era Silvestri drawn X-Men team, which consists, I'm trying to think of it, this is kind of just pre-Gambit, pre-Siege Perilous. We're talking like Colossus, Wolverine, Storm, maybe Jubilee, that kind of era.
The mid to late 80s.
Yeah, because that was the kind of, that's the first, I can still remember the very first X-Men comic I bought, and that was the team, and that was the one that stuck. That is, since they deviated from that, when characters drop out or they get put on another team, that's just one step away from the perfect team composition. So that's not cool. Another one would be the Fantastic Four, because it's one of the few teams, apart from a few minor glitches, that has actually stuck with just the four core members. When you go to the Avengers, which do you mean? What Avengers? What era are we talking? We're talking the earlier. If you know Fantastic Four, hey, it's the four people from the Fantastic Four, apart from obviously She-Hulk and that. So that's a particularly fun team as well. And hopefully we will see some new Fantastic Four books coming in with the end of Marvel 2-in-1, and hopefully a reboot for the Fantastic Four in June. But the one book I can think of that I honestly would love to see coming back would be the original lineup for Excalibur, because that was just the best book ever. So if we could go back to an Alan Davis drawn Captain Britain, Nightcrawler, and Kitty Pryde and Phoenix book with Megan as well, that would be the absolute pinnacle of comic book goodness.
That's okay. Like my favorite Excalibur lineup.
It was just so perfect, absolutely perfect. The artwork was brilliant. It was kooky. It was fun. It was still embedded in continuity without so it didn't kind of stray too far away from the existing Marvel universe. And you know, but I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Well, you know, Aid, you just made me think of something. Assuming that Disney, in fact, does get all their X rights back from Fox, I would assume that Excalibur is something that Fox has had all this time. And with Marvel looking, you know, what are we going to do for Phase 4 and Phase 5? You know, would it not be, you know, see, the somewhere down the road, you know, doing an Excalibur movie would not be the craziest notion of all. And you kind of wonder if maybe that might be some impetus to get some more momentum behind the comic again.
It's possible. I mean, they did just technically have the original team in X-Men Gold Annual, I want to say. Yeah. And was okay, but they didn't do a lot in it. It was a lot of chatting and, you know, it was like, okay, fair enough. So that's fine. But the Alan Davis, I think, pretty much did a 50-issue run, I think, on that before other people took over with minor fill-ins as well. But that is the perfect run. I've got all these those issues up to like 50, 75, whatever it was, and I would happily go and buy the trades again so that I'd have to dig them out every time I had to read them, because I just absolutely adore that stuff.
So who should play Captain Britain in the inevitable Excalibur future?
Well, I
Sean
honestly...
Sean Bean,
jeez. I all I can say is whoever plays him, they've got to have the non-beardy version of Captain Britain, not the current bearded version of Captain Britain. That would be the only thing that needed to, and obviously the original costume, not the new one with, or the last one with the little diamonds on it, has to be the one with the Union Jack on it.
So not well, Ryan, you know,
well, Marvel has to hire like former Doctor Who's, so like they haven't hired Matt Smith. Either Matt Smith, I guess, would be their leading guy.
Well, yeah, supposed to be a tenant in Defenders and whatever, aren't we? So, yeah, looking around for any. Who'd we know is British? That's, oh, yeah, any Doctor Who will do. That'd be fine. It'll be Tom Baker, probably. Completely random.
It's either him or Capaldi, I guess.
Brian Blessed.
That, yeah, well, that would be interesting. He could shout it, so that'd be real cool.
Oh, hey, by the way, we're not going to get Season 2 of Defenders, since someone mentioned Defenders.
We're not going to get Season 2 of Defenders.
Not getting Season 2 of the Defenders. It was the lowest watched Marvel show on Netflix, even lower, apparently, than Iron Fist.
But all the other individual series are getting series, aren't they?
Yeah, Jessica Jones just started Season 2 today.
Oh, really? Okay. Because so, yep. I see preview work for, or preview art for Daredevil 3 and Iron Fist 2, but... That's interesting. I wonder.
Yeah, that was based on a quote from Kristen Ritter in the Hollywood Reporter.
That is damn. There's Walt with the source. Yeah, that's where that came from.
But so why? What's just as a side tangent? Why do you think that failed? Where all the other, and obviously it didn't fail bad enough that they decided, well, screw it, we won't have any more of these team, but we'll break them all up into individuals again.
Honestly, when they put them all together, for me, it felt a little forced. Because they could have gotten away with doing that, doing the Defenders, if it was just Daredevil and Iron Fist, because ultimately those were the two important characters in it for the storyline. Because Daredevil, with his, you know, continuing to fight the Hand and looking for Elektra, and the setup they had done with Iron Fist and him fighting the Hand. Those are the only two characters that were really necessary. Luke Cage and Jessica Jones were really just there to tag along. And Jessica mostly for the investigative aspect.
The crazy thing about that being as well is that if you go to the comics, they all fit apart from Daredevil. Generally speaking, look, you've got Jessica Jones and Luke Cage have been involved. You've got Colleen Wing and Iron Fist and then Misty as well, all being heroes for hire or a subsidiary. And then Daredevil kind of just shoved in because he runs around New York a little bit. That's it. So that he should be technically speaking, he should be the one that stands out. All the other ones should be able to, like Luke Cage should show up in Iron Fist, or Iron Fist should show up in Luke Cage, or, you know, Misty Wing should show up in Iron Fist or in Luke Cage to team up with Colleen, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's very strange, but yeah, I must say I only watched a couple of episodes. It's like not a lot happening.
But the way they're going, if they're not going to be doing another Defenders, I won't mind. Just as long as the other characters show up in the other series sometime, just for continuity's sake. You know, I need some help with this. I'm going to get that big invulnerable guy to help me.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I enjoyed it. I watched it all the way through. But honestly, they could have just done most of that story with a 90-minute, single TV movie. They got everybody together and just left out, you know, the hour they spent in the Chinese restaurant talking about shit. So
yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, you could have done it like a special, tied all four stories together, did a little crossover, let them shoot out onto their own little second series and do it again later on, do that instead, rather than saying, hey, we need an entire series to do this story. Yeah,
exactly. Jacob, on to you. What you got?
Okay, I want to start by saying I love the X-Men. They had a really resonant story with their whole, you know, don't be a racist dick in the era that is really important, and even to the modern audiences, considering, you know, we have this whole resurgence of racism in America and this resurgence of anti-LGBT. So the X-Men are really a good voice to tell these stories, but the X-Men are incredibly racist, because they are a group that's supposed to be all about showing humanity that mutant kind can interact with humans, and everything will be just fine. Except that the mutants are always just hanging out with other mutants. And even Charles Xavier is really, really bad about those kind of lessons that he's imparting, because he has these vast telepathic abilities that he, when he uses them against other mutants, he's like getting their permission. And, you know, I'm going to be going to, into your mind. Is this okay? But when it comes to a normal human, he will mind control them without a thought. Charles Xavier is so freaking racist. That's what I have to say about the X-Men. I love them, but oh my God, you really need to think about these repercussions. As far as teams I enjoy, I really liked the concept of Marv Wolfman's run on Teen Titans. That was a pretty good run, especially because when you consider it next to the Justice League at the time, the Justice League was very much about what they were doing as a team, and they would go off and fight these big evils. But otherwise, if you wanted to find out more about the characters and who they are individually, you had to go to all their different comics. Whereas the Teen Titans, you got to know them as people. You got to really know Dick Grayson a little more and why he left Bruce, and you got to see his relationship with Coriander grow and all that sort of thing. You got to really know the characters pretty well as individuals in this one comic. You didn't have to go to all the different stories.
Fair enough.
And that really translated over to some of the shows I like Young Justice. They did a great job with keeping that sort of thing going on there.
Okay, cool. When are we getting series 3 on that, season 3?
That is supposed to be this fall, I believe. They're supposed to, I believe they're, I'll have to look this up. I'm not certain on that, but I think they're launching the new WB streaming show this fall. And Young Justice season 3 is supposed to be with the flagship show.
I had forgotten I was going to be on WB streaming. So.
It's going to be the same thing again, isn't it? Yeah.
Which means staring at the Pirate Bay, basically.
So, Jacob, so you say that the X-Men have a problem. Do you think it's about time then we started an X-Men team with other heroes that aren't necessarily mutants? Because you are right, it is that everyone in the X-Men is a mutant. So it's like, it is kind of a weird little community where they just say, right, nobody else. So Uncanny Avengers was a step in the right direction in one way because they kind of had a bit of crossover.
Exactly. I think if the Xavier School for Gifted Youth included some non-mutant characters, it would be excellent. Those kids, the Power Pack, should have shown up.
I don't know what it doesn't. It does seem a bit odd to say, hey, you got powers. Oh, you can blow up cars at 50 paces. You're a mutant. No, well, step away.
Yeah. So I really don't understand why he hasn't taken in non-mutants, because the whole point is teaching youths to utilize their powers responsibly. Let's have some non-mutants in the group.
Well, there was a step toward that in the early 80s, late 70s. Spider-Man and his amazing friends. There was an episode with the X-Men that later was called back to when they encounter a villain. It was a kid who got basically superpowers from getting struck by lightning through a video game. And he could become like this giant electro monster thing and travel through power lines and get all sorts of crazy powers. They later brought him to the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, and Charles Xavier took him in. So there is precedent for that kind of thing happening. But to address like the fact that they only hung out with mutants, I think you got to look back at how Marvel Comics was using that platform to tackle racism. If you think of mutant kind, and if you've ever had a science class, you know that the creators of the X-Men had never had a science class because the term mutant does not apply to how they're using it. But the thing about the mutant community is you're basically looking at a group of political refugees because of the way the Marvel Comics sees them. If you're Captain America and you get a needle put in your arm and suddenly you're big buff and on a fireman's calendar, or you're the Fantastic Four while being the aeronautic heroes of America exploring this new frontier, you get exposed to these cosmic rays. It's through no fault of your own that this kind of thing happened, whereas you were born this way, you know, this is your fault kind of deal. And that kind of makes that brings them into almost a political refugee kind of deal, because now you're thinking it's more on the way that the population of the Marvel Comics see mutants versus the fact that they want to just hang out with mutants. And if you look at guys like like in the Uncanny Avengers, you know, that was another step toward, hey, you know, these people want to be more than just their own community. They want to be part of something bigger. And I think that's what Charles Xavier's message was, you know, be a part of community. You know, this where you have Homo Superior, you have normal human, but we're all human at the core level. We need to start working toward that. But I think that especially in the original run of Uncanny Avengers, which I loved, even though having part of Charles Xavier's brain spliced into the Red Skull was kind of creepy. I loved the fact that it showed that there was still this prejudice, you know, and it was a nod to what was happening in America at the time without it slapping you in the face. You know, there's still this prejudice out there, and this is why they kind of cling to each other, because there's still that animosity out there. And you can even see it in a really fun show I've been watching, The Gifted on Fox.
I've been enjoying that show. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They take in that family, and the mom and dad are all, are normal, you know, but the community starts to embrace them because here are these two normal people whose stake in the game is their children, but yet they're risking their lives helping this mutant community try and establish this underground to keep the federal government off their ass. And I really love the way they look at the mom, because the mom is just like, is a nurse, and she steps up and helps several people through some pretty traumatic events, and they love her for it. And it's just, you can see the admiration in their, why can't we have this from the rest of society? So,
yeah, you know, it's been a great show.
I think that's how I see the X-Men.
Yeah, see, I get that. But I don't get it purely in the context of the Marvel Universe, because if the X-Men were the only superpowered heroes, then you can understand as a standoff. But the idea, you can say, Hulk, where did you get your powers? Gamma radiation. Okay, you go through. Wolverine, where did you get yours? Oh, well, I was a mutant. Well, no, you go stand in the back. You stand in the back. That was kind of always bugged me. And to be honest, come on. If Charles Xavier decided that the mutant race was called Homo Superior, that's only going to piss people off, isn't it? Come on. It's like, hey, yeah, we're the Homo Superior, mate. Yeah, okay, yes, we are.
Did decide they were called Homo Superior. Charles Xavier and Magneto were the ones who were responsible for writing the initial scientific paper on mutants in their college days. They came up with the term.
I can say with the Wrangles people. I mean, you can see, you can obviously with more modern stories, when you've got like Genosha and stuff like that, where you've got like the entire country of mutants, stuff like that, you can see why that would then kind of be, okay, well, there's an entire country over there with them, they're all bad. But if I never got my head around why one superhero was okay, but the X-Men were bad. Spider-Man, bit by Red X Spider, Wolverine, no, you're terrible. That always annoyed me. But then again, there's also stuff like the Marvel Universe that always bugged me as well. It's like, why has Thor not got a church dedicated to him all the while? He's the actual God of Thunder. He should have a church following him around all the while. So, oh my God, it's the actual God of Thunder. Yes, we're going to pray to the God of Thunder. So
I am writing to Marvel tomorrow so that you can write this.
That is something I enjoyed about the Ultimates Universe is Thor did have religious following.
There you go. See? And it would make sense. Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't you? Yeah, if you can actually prove, oh, yeah, I go up there and see Odin every 5 minutes. Oh, well, yeah, we're definitely following you. What the other deities, they've not shown up yet. When they show up, we'll start a church for them. You know, it's just a lot of things that need filling in. So.
There is Hercules. And Ares are also in Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. So they should have followings as well. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, whoever. So whoever shows up to the party gets a church.
Yeah. You know, Chuck Rice and I were talking about this, and he was like, why is it the Beast is a good guy when he's in the Avengers, and everyone in New York loves him, but when he's in X-Men, he's an outcast, and, you know, people don't love him anymore.
Beast was one of the very first X-Men characters that actually crossed over to another team, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. So, well, hey, speaking of politics and superheroes, this is the worst segue possible to talk about. Sorry, I know, man. I'm like butter. I'm on a roll. our friend and co-host here, Chris McLaughlin, has launched a Kickstarter for a book called The Summit. Chris, why don't you tell us about it, since we're talking about super teams and whatnot.
Well, as I think we've discussed, and I've mentioned on social media that this summer, let's call it a surprise, I wound up with an 8,000 word manuscript that no longer had a home, and it was weird because it was in my hands not because of the quality of the writing, but for other concerns, and I sort of wandered around lost, thinking, you know, this is good stuff. People deserve to see this. And I just sort of didn't know what to do with it. I thought maybe this would be like my hidden treasure thing until you organized the Hurricane fundraiser. And then about a week later than I should have, I thought, hey, I wonder if I could just throw this in the charity bundle. And maybe, you know, if like one person donates because of this, then it was worth it. You know, it was worthwhile. And way more so than you were surprised by the positive reaction to it. And so we put it out for general sale with no art, a fabulous layout, even with no art to work out, I must say, but no art. And the thing sold even after several thousand people got a copy of it already in that bundle. And, you know, I think you were the one that saw the potential in this project way before I did. And up until the moment the Kickstarter funded, even I was a little skeptical that there are that many people that want to pay for something, just straight up pay to create something I wrote. And I guess this is my chance to thank all the backers, because you have made several dreams come true at once. And I really, really appreciate the support we've gotten so far. But if you want to go back to its true origins, I was trapped in a miserable school system, surviving only by reading back issues of the marvelous and much missed Outre magazine. And I was reading a profile of Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack. And I've always had a fascination for them. I mean, you know, to think that, you know, that guys that talented hung out together. And they had this period where they dominated movies, music, and TV, and got into politics on the side. And, you know, did it with such style and such swagger, and in an age where, you know, for a lot of celebrities, we have to excuse a lot of bad behavior, these guys seem to be on the right side of every single fight of the era that they lived in, you know, always fighting for civil rights and social justice. And I was reading this profile, and the writer just sort of offhandedly called Frank Sinatra's Rat Pack the Alcoholic Justice League of America. And the idea stuck in my head. I started thinking, like, wow, what if you had like an actual team of superheroes that did things with that kind of style and swagger? And so that stuck around in my head for 15 years. And then I finally had an excuse to write it. And now, thanks to you, Mike, and Aid, and Walt, and everybody else that helped out on it, we're getting a chance to share that with the public. And I was really pleased with how it came out. I mean, just the way that the actual Justice League sort of matches up with the Rat Pack in some cases is like scary good. And in some other places, it took some unexpected twists and turns. But yeah, but it, the way it all came together, I was very, very, very pleased with it. And I guess most of all, you know, I spent a couple months thinking, well, okay, this is my own weird process as a writer. But to me, my characters feel like people. It's like they're talking to me in my brain, I guess, because most of my characters are pieces of people that I've actually known or really admired. And when that manuscript got tossed back in my lap, among other things, it just felt like six of my friends just got murdered. You know, that nobody, you know, that just killed them dead and no one would ever see them. And just it's among the many, many joys of all this is people are actually getting to see these characters. And I'm really pleased at how positive the response has been. You know, I've been keeping up with the comments on the Kickstarter page and people are saying so many wonderful things about it. And like the things I always kind of dreamed I'd hear about this project. So it's been great, great fun and wonderful for me. And I'm proud of the work and I'm delighted of the people that I've worked with. And I might add in closing that this is also the first project from my imprint, Ghost Show Press. And now that people have said that, you know, this is something they want to see, I'm going to be looking forward to doing more Ghost Show stuff in the future with people I want to work with, like the people on this podcast. So, yeah, we're going to get together. We're going to jam and we're going to treat you guys to some good old fashioned role playing game thrills. So if you have a mind to, please go over to Facebook, look up Ghost Show Press, like our page, because we've got more and bigger things coming. And I'm really excited about them.
Cool. So if listeners want to find this, it's on Kickstarter right now. It's Christopher McLaughlin's World Defenders, the Summit. We're almost 300% funded after 4 days. So the response has been really great. And Chris, yeah. I've just been curious. I never knew you were lining up the JLA next to the Rat Pack before. I mean, I've read the book and I can kind of line up, you know, different members of the team, different members of the Rat Pack, but I didn't realize you were corresponding them to, I mean, obviously the Frank Sinatra guy, the constable, he's your Superman, right?
Well, that was the spark of it, because when it had to be a UN team, I had like a little connect the dots chart. I wrote down the six most prominent members of the Rat Pack, the six most prominent members of the Justice League, and all six continents. So it was just connect, you know, some combination of the three. So the constable was Superman, Frank Sinatra, and North America.
Okay.
And that was my springboard. I had those three things and said go.
That makes sense.
Thank you.
So, all right, I'm looking at him.
Yes.
And obviously, Destiny is your Wonder Woman. And is that Shirley MacLaine?
That's a riff on Shirley MacLaine, yes.
All right, gotcha.
Total riff on Shirley MacLaine, yes.
Okay, all right. Conjurer, that is your Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes. I that was one of the ones I thought people would, that was so obvious nobody would get it. But, you know, I mean, again, I don't want to be ungentlemanly here, but the reason that this manuscript got tossed back to me, the fact that it was a riff on Sammy Davis Jr., just went completely over people's heads. So yeah.
All right. So who is Blue Bolt a riff on?
Okay. All right. This is the one that mutated the most. Okay. Mm-hmm. I started out connecting Dean Martin in Australia, but I realized that, you know, unlike the real Rat Pack, I didn't want mine to be, you know, almost all predominantly male. So I realized that somebody would have to get gender flipped. And the notion of doing like a super talented, like Batman riff, but somebody that, like, despite their talents, mostly stays out of the spotlight and only really does the superhero thing when their more aggressive friends prod them to. Because if you've read very much on the Rat Pack, Dean Martin, despite his partying image, at the first opportunity would sneak off to a hotel room, drink a glass of milk, and watch a Western on TV. In fact, there's a story about Dean that Frank threw him a surprise birthday party, and Dean got tired of all the people being in his house, so he called the cops on his own birthday party just so that he could get people to leave. So the idea of like a reclusive Batman, that gender flipped Dean Martin, that was the first genesis of that. And secondly, I also got some wonderful input from Darren Bulmer, who was a long time collaborator with me on a lot of great M&M books like Emerald City. And Darren did the official Australia write-up for Mutants and Masterminds Atlas of Earth Prime book. So I sat down and talked with Darren and asked him if he had any concepts that he never got a chance to use. And so it's based on a rough character sketch that Darren had. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he'll mind me saying this, but in the end, in the middle of all this, Darren unfortunately lost his sister to cancer, and the character is named after her and dedicated to her. And and I got a lot of tremendous response from Darren and his whole family. They all really, really appreciated the tribute. And among the many great things this project has meant to me, if I gave that family one atom of comfort, that the whole thing was worth doing. And I really, really am glad I was able to do that for a genuinely great and talented human being.
Oh, that is a cool story. I didn't know about
Thank
that.
You. Yeah.
Well, hey, we are doing it obviously for M&M and yes. Also Icons, Supers, Waltz Game, and Savage Worlds.
Hero System.
And we've unlocked stretch goals for Fate Core and the new VNV we can't call VNV, Mighty Protectors.
Yes. Yes, and hopefully a major surprise to come. So back the Kickstarter, or at least follow Ghost Show Press, because we're hoping to have a big announcement coming up here in just a few days.
Yeah, at the very least, Storm Cook has agreed to do some more art for us if we reach $1,000. Yes. We haven't announced that yet on the Kickstarter page, but that's a thing. So
yes.
So check us out, and maybe this should be one of those 2-week Kickstarters, because we've got almost 300% after like 4 days, and it's still got most of the month to go. So,
well, you know, I'm still hoping for that one where I can just rent a van and drive across America and like personally thank everybody that backed it.
This is one of the reasons why when I did the compilation for Superpowered Legends, we did the 15-day, because we learned when we did the Superpowered Bestiary, we got all of our money pretty much in the first 2 weeks, and then we had 2 weeks of absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm dreading is the mid Kickstarter lull, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and listeners, if you backed us or you just like what we're doing, please go to your social medias. Please tell people what we're doing. And I think it's a great product in its own right. And the better this does, the more likelihood that we're going to be able to do bigger and better things for you in the future at Ghost Show.
Yeah, for those of you who don't back a Kickstarter unless it's funded, it's funded. It's at almost 300%.
Yes, and the manuscript is done, and we have the art. So just give us you will get your stuff. It's practically already done.
All right. Well, hey, this concludes the shameless promotion section of the podcast. Thanks for everybody for coming out. Any last closing thoughts on Super Teams before we wrap it up?
We need to have somebody do the Banff podcast up in stats.
Explain what you mean.
Status all up, because, you know, technically we're a super team. I mean,
several core members. And maybe we can be the next group I riff off of for a project.
Yeah. I'm not sure what roles we would all fill there. That could be a whole conversation there. And it might bore the hell out of our listeners right now. So yeah. Let's just wrap things up. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks to the panelists. And we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.